All right. Hello and welcome to today's RealCom webinar. I'm Chuck Nyswanger, your RealCom host for today's topic, Elevate In-Building Connectivity, Converge, and PropTech User Experiences. Thank you for tuning in to the live session or viewing this as a recording. We've got a great show for you today with information you can actually use to enhance your company's in-building wireless and create a transformative occupant experience for tenants, guests, and service providers. But before we get started, let me go over a few housekeeping items to help you have a great webinar experience. First of all, thank you to our live attendees. We encourage you to use the Q&A box at the bottom left of your screen to submit questions or comments. It's always a lot better when you're an active participant. We love hearing from you, and we'll try to get to all your questions, but if we don't get them answered here during the webinar, we'll follow up with you once the event is concluded. In the handout section, you'll find more detailed bios of our panelists and the entire slide deck with more information about our sponsors, what they offer, and even some of the details on the slides that were a little more complex, so be sure and check those out. For the best webinar experience, we do recommend closing out any other internet applications, especially streaming videos. And if you're watching this from a building with, quote, less than stellar interconnectivity, definitely send a link to this webinar's recording to the building owners. I'm sure they would appreciate it. If you're experiencing any technical difficulties with connectivity, sound, or video quality, you can put that in the Q&A. You can also send an email to Sarah Bempored, S-Bempored, @realcom.com for help during the event. But don't worry, you won't miss anything because you'll receive a link to the webinar recording later today. This educational webinar is supported by our outstanding sponsors, HQO. They're real estate experience. We call it REX. Platform converges data, technology, and customer through the only end-to-end experience solution transforming real estate to drive tenant and employee engagement, satisfaction, and retention. AirTower Networks has an impressive array of services that can elevate your in-building connectivity, including design and build, managed networks, network as a service, and even rooftop leasing with solutions everything from cellular, managed Wi-Fi, private LTE, public safety, and smart buildings. And we welcome AirTower to the webinar and the RealCom family, and hope you have a great webinar experience. We are certainly grateful for the contributions by these vendors, and not just here, but to our industry, to RealCom, and to helping us educate viewers in sessions just like these. So if you're ready to optimize every aspect of your company's in-building connectivity and elevate your tenant and guest experiences to the next level, I recommend including these companies as part of your vendor evaluation process. Go to their website and book an introductory meeting. I think you'll enjoy chatting with them. Our moderator for today is Mike Osment. He's Managing Director for Getzler Henrich. Welcome, Mike.
Good afternoon. Took me a second to figure out if it was
Yes.
morning or afternoon.
Mike, I was just going to say, you couldn't just stay away from the challenges of analytics, AI, and advanced technology and do something important like become a certified personal trainer at a fitness club or something
Yeah,
like
there you
that for
go.
senior years. So,
All
all
right.
right, I'm going to let you go. Thanks, Mike, and have a good session. I'll see you at the end.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. So welcome everyone to the latest RealCom webinar dealing with in-building wireless communications. I'm Mike Osment, formerly CTO for Bedrock Detroit and CIO at the Taubman Company, currently Managing Director for Analytics, AI, and Advanced Technology at Getzler Henrich, consulting firm specializing in corporate restructuring and turnaround. So an exciting topic for me personally. I've been around the commercial real estate space long enough to have gone through a couple iterations of wireless connectivity, call it dogma, but changes. When I started at Taubman over a decade ago, that topic was Wi-Fi for shoppers in their shopping centers. The other wireless issue at the time was the implementation of DAS for providing enhanced cellular coverage. The Wi-Fi we had under control, and we had great coverage and service throughout the portfolio. DAS, for me personally, was frustrating because we seemingly had little control over coverage, carriers, or even if our malls would have a DAS. Taubman had roughly 20 malls with DAS provided by American Tower. but none had all carriers or complete coverage. Deaths in those days meant that carriers were paying for the infrastructure and paying a decent monthly rent to be on the DAS and providing service in the space. The frustration with DAS led me to spend quite a bit of time researching alternatives such as Wi-Fi offloading, small cells, CBRS, etc. They seem promising in different ways, but unfortunately we're still in the future. So fast forward from 2017 to 2022, and I took a role as a CTO at Bedrock Detroit and encountered a changed landscape. Detroit is particularly interesting for wireless because of proximity to Canada. So, tenants were complaining about, lack of coverage. They're also complaining that they were getting service from Canadian companies and paying international roaming and things like that. So it was clear that we had to be thinking about something to help, get the issues resolved. When we got out talking to carriers about possible solutions, it became clear that the landscape had changed. Carriers were mostly expecting the landlord to fund the millions of dollars to install the technology, and they wouldn't commit to being on the DAS or trying to bring other carriers on board. Carriers were focused on deploying mid-band and millimeter wave macro cellular coverage for outdoors, consuming what capital they had left. There had been a big auction of mid-band spectrum where, in retrospect, they spent about $83 billion and really didn't know what they were going to do with that spectrum. And now they've likely way overpaid for it, but it consumed the capital, so they're spending very little on indoor. The metrics that the big carriers use to incentivize their executives, plan where to put new networks in and things, were all around coverage and speed out of doors. And so indoors was pretty much ignored. In the meantime, changes in materials used in construction, sustainable buildings such as low-E glass, were making all buildings less friendly to cellular coverage. So, it was bad a decade ago, it's just gotten worse and worse. CBRS is maturing, but the carriers were not yet available beyond a pilot implementation. And so on. So this confluence of trends was poised to damage everyone involved in providing coverage in buildings. And oh, by the way, 80 to 90% of voice calls and cellular data is consumed indoors. Large landmark buildings were being built and occupied with little or no cellular coverage. In all buildings, cellular users were getting spotty coverage. Efforts in sustainability to exploit the Internet of Things to better manage energy use, automation, sustainability, and buildings were being hamstrung, and the carriers were just missing in action. This change essentially meant that in a DAS world, the number of installs which needed to be certified by carriers went from the thousands of large venues, the stadiums, the shopping centers, things like that, to the millions of buildings, because now every new building needs to have some kind of cellular infrastructure. And the carriers who were stretched to go and evaluate big venues for DAS were just not up to the test. So in this environment, alternative technologies such as CBRS, small cells, Ericsson Dot, and others have matured and work well for data coverage, but we're still lacking the carrier commitment to making it work for voice. Today, we'll hear from a number of real estate technologists working with these issues. I'd like to start by introducing Vardhan Chaudhary. Vardhan is the vice president in the investments group at JVG Smith, where he leads the firm's digital infrastructure strategy and business unit. Vardhan, it's all yours.
Great. Thank you, Michael. I'm just getting my camera on here. Thanks, Michael, and thank you to the RealCom team for having me and having JVG on this panel. Looking forward to sharing a bit more about what we're doing from an in-building connectivity perspective, but also as it relates to our connectivity platform and really our infrastructure platform more broadly. So I wanted to maybe start by just giving a brief overview on on really who we are. JBG Smith, we are a publicly traded real estate investment trust, single market focused. That market is the DC Metro National Capital Region market. And increasingly, our company is focusing on one sub-market within the DMV, which is called National Landing. National Landing is, as you see on the screen here, a really tremendous neighborhood that for us presented a scale opportunity, both in terms of geographic scale, but also vertical scale, and our density in the neighborhood is quite significant. We are located just adjacent to Reagan Airport. We are adjacent to the Pentagon, so the northern side of our neighborhood, and what you can see on the left side of the page here. And we're about a stone's throw away from DC, the mall, and regulators across the river in Washington. And within this neighborhood, again, we enjoy a tremendous amount of scale and control, and everything you see in a color, we own, control, or somehow influence in some way, shape, or form. We are really fortunate to have some incredible anchors in our neighborhood. Chief among them are Virginia Tech on the southern part of the neighborhood, what you see on the right-hand side of the screen, and Amazon on the left-hand side of the screen, which is, again, the northern side of the neighborhood. Virginia Tech is an incredible economic development engine and driver of activity for the neighborhood. They'll be opening their doors in 2025 and matriculating 750 master's and PhD students, specifically focused on introducing STEM-focused talent into industry while they maintain their research and development programs down in Blacksburg. Amazon often needs no introduction, and that's the case here as well. But National Landing is home to Amazon's HQ2. Back in 2018, there was a nationwide pursuit that likely many of you on the webinar are familiar with, and we were fortunate enough to land one of the two awarded locations for HQ2 that ultimately went down to a single location, which is right here in Northern Virginia in Arlington, and specifically within our National Landing neighborhood. JBG owned the land under what's Amazon's phase one, and we were able to come to terms to sell our land, stay on to help develop Amazon's campus, as well as property manage, retail, leasing management as well, and a whole host of other connectivity tissue that we continue to enjoy with Amazon. And they are incentivized to bring upwards of 25,000 jobs into the market. And from an economic development standpoint, again, that for us is really, a once in a generation opportunity that we are really excited to be working on, and also to have in our neighborhood to really invest around. So within those two anchors, between Amazon on the north side and Virginia Tech on the south side, we are implementing a tremendous amount of change across the neighborhood, both from a physical perspective and as well from a digital perspective. So what we as we look at our digital infrastructure platform, we are really investing across the neighborhood at scale in real infrastructure assets, applying a lot of the same principles we apply on the physical side. As we redevelop buildings, we curate the retail experience, we implement public spaces that are really high quality, and we're very thoughtful about master planning the physical environment, just given our ability to plan at neighborhood scale rather than building or block scale. We're applying those same master planning principles to digital infrastructure, which for us starts at the fiber layer. We are deploying a dark fiber network across the neighborhood. Most of that has been net new investment of development capital from our balance sheet, but a portion of it is actually an acquisition, or rather a fiber IRU, which we were able to execute with Arlington County to take advantage of existing fiber plant in the ground. Taken together, our fiber assets are really meant to connect all of our buildings to a dark fiber network. We have 13 buildings on air today, with a ramp to the remainder of our buildings over the course of time. We're pre-connecting all of our buildings to this fiber network, and all of that fiber originates as you move up the stack to our urban edge data center. We believe that a local edge data center is not only critical and important for sort of a new on-ramp, a new hub for carriers to enter into. And that is portion of our data center as a carrier hotel that serves as the new centralized point of presence for carriers to enter into, use our fiber, and then ultimately access our buildings through our fiber network. But in addition to that, we also see the value of having space, power, and call it a powered shell conditioned facility that can be utilized by whether it's enterprise customers or cloud providers or any other user of a data center. We have in the data center world, our data center is fairly small. It's about a half a megawatt of critical load, but we're really heartened to be able to have that, what we feel is a fairly unique offering in an urban marketplace, to be able to offer sort of an on-site, so to speak, data center facility within National Landing. Those two layers of our infrastructure platform, the fiber and the data center, allow us to also step into some of the more innovative wireless implementations that we're here to talk about today, including the in-building side of the house. But before we get to the in-building side, I also wanted to mention how we're addressing the outside coverage of the neighborhood. And that's where public 5G comes in. We're the tower company for the neighborhood, and we are working with AT&T as our sort of first and anchor tenant to deploy their 5G network and 4G and LTE network as well, but really their small cell network across the neighborhood using our real estate, our fiber, and our data center. And we're carrier neutral by design and in principle, and so we're excited to have AT&T in the neighborhood, although certainly also eager to introduce some of the other MNOs into the market over time. Similarly, we are carrier neutral and are really focused on delivering carrier neutral, sort of have AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and potentially even Dish. And as the MVNOs like of yesterday, like Comcast, are sort of stepping further into delivering MNO type infrastructure and service, we're really looking forward to introducing them into the neighborhood, both in the outdoor environment, but also in the in-building environment. Last but not least, we are also owners of CBRS Spectrum. We went out in auction 105 and purchased 40 megahertz of PAL licenses in Arlington and 30 megahertz of PAL licenses in Alexandria. During the auction, there was speculation about why would JBG or REIT be stepping into such a significant haul of private access spectrum. And ultimately, it's not because we have ambitions or a business model to be an operator or to provide our own network services, but rather it is because we recognize that there's value in having control from the fiber under the ground to the spectrum in the air, allowing us to be sort of an easy button, so to speak, for enterprise tenants in our commercial buildings, as well as, as use cases emerge for residents and also in retail environments, education environments, et cetera, having the ability to stand up flexibly private networks and networks of all different types and flavors. We've really valued having this converged infrastructure platform. So I'll maybe pause there. I know Michael and I have chatted many times before, and I think has a few questions as we can drill further into how we're approaching in-building wireless.
All right, thanks, Radon. I think we have time for one quick question. So you guys use the term placemaking. Would you mind explaining what you mean when you say that, and how does that digital connectivity wirelessly become critical to supporting that idea?
Sure thing, Mike. So my colleagues on the development side, on the retail side, and really across JBG, have built a legacy and a specialty in physical placemaking. And so I won't do that definition justice, but in a nutshell, it is equal parts art and science in curating an urban environment from a retail perspective, as well as from a pedestrian, feel perspective. We often talk about the 2020 experience, 20 feet above grade and 20 feet outside the facade of a building. How do you create an experience that really is memorable and creates sort of joy and has a lasting impact to the person who is experiencing that real estate, experiencing that place in any environment. And we built, you know, again, a practice around curating retail, curating landscaping, hardscaping, et cetera, to really differentiate real estate and create remarkable experiences. We're applying those same principles to digital experiences and digital infrastructure. We've basically master planned our infrastructure deployment of the fiber network, the data center, outdoor small cells, in addition to towers that sit on our rooftops, and now increasingly stepping into the in-building environment to be very thoughtful about how digital experiences, and starting with just connectivity and robustness of connectivity, exists for a person who's inside of one of our buildings, but then also extends out to the outdoor environment, and also and frankly provides for optionality and a real sort of, I guess, amenity and differentiated choice of services for commercial tenants in our office buildings. So we really feel like we're sort of digitally master planning, digitally placemaking our neighborhood with these infrastructure assets.
All right, great. Thank you, Vardan. Up next, we have, Charlie Miller. Charlie Miller is a real estate technology and innovation leader with over 20 years of experience driving digital transformation through design, product development, and technology. Welcome, Charlie.
Thanks, Mike. And good morning or good afternoon, everyone. That was a great session from Vardan, and it's sort of a perfect segue with his last comments around placemaking and digital master planning. That's what I want to talk about here today. I would start first by saying, if you haven't been to National Landing in DC, you should visit. Vardan was kind enough to show me around last year. It's a fantastic project and a fantastic neighborhood. So I want to talk about some of the process and some of the inner workings of how at Brookfield, where I was recently part of Brookfield's innovation and digital experience team, and beyond Brookfield, how we've used digital master planning to deliver great experiences. Let me just see if I can advance. Oh, there we go. Some examples of some of the, so I'm a consultant and I focus on sort of the convergence of digital experience, infrastructure planning, and technology planning. I've done it across asset types at places like The Grove in Los Angeles, the Barack Obama Presidential Center in Chicago, Brookfield Place in Dubai, Hudson Yards in New York City. I'm particularly interested in this question of how we can be thoughtful in the development of digital assets in the same way that we are in the development of physical assets. I think by its nature, commercial real estate is not what I would say a digitally native industry. Commercial real estate tends to think in terms of concrete and steel, and it can be challenging to think in terms of data, connectivity, software, hardware, et cetera. So I want to talk about how we think about digital master planning and sort of what it is, and I'll share some examples. A digital master plan, the sort of definition I like to use is it combines sort of two things, a vision of the future, so we call it an experience vision of what a place will be like in the future, and a strategic technology plan to get us there. So there's sort of the user experience side of things, and then there's the strategic planning side of things in terms of specifications, infrastructure, investment, et cetera. It's really at the convergence of three domains: user desirability, so user experiences, operational processes, et cetera, sort of the back of house and the operational stack, business viability, how can we identify strategies, solutions, plans, et cetera, that deliver good return on investment, maybe unlock new revenue streams or streamline our costs, and how can this be supported by feasible technology strategy, infrastructure requirements, sort of the state of the art, what's emerging, what might be the state of the art in 5 years when a project is complete or occupied. This is a framework that our team at Brookfield developed to think about experience and sort of to align a group of people on a development project around a vision of the future. I should zoom out and say, you know, oftentimes big ambitious real estate projects tend to present themselves as the most ambitious or the most futuristic blank ever built neighborhood, the most futuristic neighborhood ever built, or the most digitally connected building ever built, right? And that's great PR, but I think what we find throughout the development process is if you get a room full of stakeholders from that project into a room, there's a pretty good chance none of them will agree on what exactly that means. And so this process is really around aligning different stakeholders in a development project on a vision of what the future means. These are some categories that we've developed to sort of start to build that consensus and build that alignment from the telecom core, which is really the foundation there on the left, to things like mobility and EV charging and what the parking experience might be like, over on the right to digital signage and wayfinding, for example. These are all components of what it is like to experience a property or a building or a neighborhood. And this is a very useful framework that we've used to sort of align on, again, on that vision of the future, which ultimately informs the technology strategy, which I'll get to in a moment. I just want to share some examples here. Anybody on the webinar that's familiar with user experience design or user experience strategy, we use this concept of personas. Personas represent different users and different users with different needs. So I'm sharing this as an example of across asset types, whether it's office or retail or residential. There might be employees or residents or people shopping or homeowners or property management staff, et cetera, that are all users with needs in terms of what they expect from a visit or a stay or a going to work at a property. Another example I thought I would share is an example of how we take those personas and get to experiences. So I'll pick one of these. The second row, we have a multifamily example here. Again, if you're not familiar with personas, these are like fictional sort of almost characters that are created that have needs that you can use to identify priorities and requirements. So in this case, Amanda is a resident in one of our multifamily buildings, and she's busy and she values products and services that simplify her life and routine. And the types of experiences that are potentially valuable to her are things like a resident engagement app or concierge services or package management in the building or building access control. She wants super fast connectivity. She wants EV charging in the garage. You can start to see how this approach can help us build essentially an inventory of requirements for what we need digitally out of a building to satisfy user needs. And then those requirements ultimately become what drives the technology strategy. Sharing an example here of an approach that our team at Brookfield used on existing assets. So this is I won't get into the details specifically here, but if there's an existing building that's functional, operational, we developed a process to look at that building and identify what we're doing well and where what are we doing not so well? What are we doing well? And where's the opportunity? Where's the gap? Where's the opportunity for investment? I'll give an example, and I'm not going to go through this in detail, but this is a real output from a digital experience assessment that we did at a property in the Middle East. This page is focused on the connectivity experience in that building. What's interesting about this is, I mean, this one is, you can see it's almost all green, which is great. This building did a great job on this one, but it allows us to sort of identify and agree on what the best version of that experience might be. For example, indoor wireless, right? And how is the building doing today to sort of achieve or work toward that recommended state? A better example is probably this one. So this is the same property graded and scored on mobility. And you can see there's opportunity for improvement. The red items like, hey, we didn't do such a good job in terms of the valet parking experience for visitors, or we didn't do a great job in terms of how office workers can pick up meet their Uber after work. How can we use technology to sort of, these are priorities that need to be ultimately satisfied through technology solutions. So I want to talk with a couple minutes, maybe 1 or 2 minutes I have left, around what are some outcomes of this? Like, what do we identify, and what are some sort of more tactical, tangible solutions? There's two here that I'll talk about that both provide a great experience for users in the building, and also have the potential to add real value to that building. And those examples are our managed Wi-Fi and neutral host / open access fiber. So, oops, I think I went too fast. On the managed Wi-Fi side, and I know this is a service that our sponsor AirTower may be talking about a little bit here in a moment. Managed Wi-Fi, if you're not familiar with it, it's essentially treating a multifamily, typically multifamily building, like an enterprise office building and sort of canvassing it with enterprise grade Wi-Fi. We really like this solution because it provides a great experience for, oops, I think my slides aren't in, oh, there we go. It provides a great experience for people in the building. They can move in and connect to the internet within the first couple hours of moving into the building. They don't have to fumble with sort of the traditional calling spectrum and getting the repair guy or the install guy out. But it also adds value to the landlord and the owner of that building. It can significantly increase net operating income of that building through a revenue stream, right? We really like managed Wi-Fi. That's something that came out of this. Another example on the master plan community land development side is neutral host open access fiber. The idea that fiber infrastructure can be shared by multiple telecom ISPs that are all offering service on that fiber is a fairly new approach in the US. And we really like it because it fosters competition, ultimately provides a great experience for homeowners, can drive costs down, can drive innovation up, and can drive long-term recurring revenue to the landowner. So again, a solution we really like that sort of checks both boxes. I think I'm just about out of time, but I will stop here, pass it back to Mike, and happy to take a question or move ahead. Mike?
Hey, thanks, Charlie. I think we're gonna do hold questions till the end, but really appreciate it. Next up is Brian Schwartz. Brian Schwartz, over 20 years of experience in information technologies, is currently responsible for infrastructure, end user computing, cybersecurity, and privacy at Maceridge as VP of infrastructure. Brian, welcome.
Thanks, Mike. All right, so I'll jump into who we are. So for those of you who may not know, Maceridge is owner, operator, developer of major regional shopping centers throughout the U.S. So our focus is really on the commercial side, on the real retail side of all these things, of all the of real estate. And so our focus is also going to be on the shoppers. So I'm going to echo a little bit of what Vardhan and Charlie may have talked about in essentially defining a strategy, right? That making sure you're doing or you're envisioning what you want to happen. So as we look at, and for us, as we look at our properties, we try to figure out what we want out of our properties. What does this property need? What are the requirements around it? So things like, you know, why should we be putting in Wi-Fi? You know, do we need it? Should it be, income generating? Do we want to generate analytics? You know, what other kind of wireless needs are there? Is there, you know, do we need DAS? Do we need CBRS? Do we need something else? So kind of really defining that. And that's something that Mike mentioned at the beginning as well in the property in Detroit, right? They were getting signals over from Canada, right? So that property needed a little more on the DAS side to make sure that their environment was getting local connectivity as opposed to over the border. Those are the things you want to pay attention to. Those are the things that makes each property unique, right? Every property is a little bit of a snowflake. So you want to make sure you take those unique requirements about each property and you pay attention to them and you make that part of your kind of strategy going forward. So what do we look for in a property? What are we kind of focusing on at Maceridge? And that's the customer, the shopper, right? The shopper needs to feel connected. They need to walk into the center and they need to have some connectivity. If they aren't connected, they're not going to stay. They're not going to come back, right? This is something that is going to keep them there. And that's what, you know, that's our mission, right? We want to get the shoppers in. We want to get them to stay there as long as possible, spend the day there, you know, and keep shopping. That's our job. So we want to maintain that high level of customer satisfaction, the shopper, and retain the shoppers. And we want to know what they want, right? And at the end of the day, we focus on their connectivity. And we're going to look at, you know, just the three areas briefly, just to kind of go through those of Wi-Fi, DAS systems, and CBRS. So starting with Wi-Fi, right? You know, we went through a lot of iterations of, hey, should we install Wi-Fi? What about, you know, we were in 3G, what about 4G, 5G, 6G? Why would we need Wi-Fi? And in a lot of ways, Wi-Fi is almost expected, right? It's almost, you know, it's table stakes at some level. So, you know, we opted to make sure it was there. You know, there was a time when everybody went to a venue and jumped on the Wi-Fi because they all had limited data plans. And now there seems to be unlimited data plans everywhere. So is Wi-Fi as important? You know, some people still really like jumping on Wi-Fi. Some people just ignore it. It depends on the mindset. It depends on the shopper. But it does have that connection there. It does provide that for the shopper. For us, it's generally not income generating, although we have started going into the carrier offloading piece, which Mike talked about as well at the beginning, to start getting some of that income and using our infrastructure to generate income on top of what it's there for as well. And then there's also opportunities for analytics gathering, right? With Wi-Fi, you can do a lot. We haven't jumped into a lot of the tracking because there's a lot of tracking, and I know there's a lot of different schools of thought around that. But you know, things like, you know, getting names for newsletters or marketing purposes, there's a lot of value that you can gather out of that as well for the marketing team or other teams that would want to use some of that data and mine that data. On the DAS side, we partner with American Tower to put in DAS systems. And you know, this gives that cellular connectivity to our shoppers. They walk in, they want to be able to make a call, they want to be able to get a call, they want to be able to do that throughout the property. So we want to make sure that that's giving them the connectivity for them. What we're focusing on is those neutral hosts and allow that opportunity to get as many carriers as we can on there, because you know, as Mike also mentioned, it's income generating, right? We're charging the vendors or the carriers to be there. So we're making money, and the more carriers we can get in there, the more money we can make. So there's a kind of a win-win. The shoppers get all the carriers they want. They come in, they get connectivity, and we get income. And the carriers can offload towers nearby when there's an aggregation of people at a center like this with the DAS. And then finally, CBRS. So this is something we haven't gone into that much. It's still a kind of a new technology for us. I know it's slowly been moving along, and it's out there and it's being utilized now. What's interesting to me is, you know, it's a private network, right? And we get to keep control of the network. We get to keep control of the data, and that can make it very interesting. It's definitely, you know, and I've heard a lot about this, but I haven't delved into it. And I think this is still kind of on the outskirts of CBRS, but the possibility for income generation. Can you lease this out to carriers, kind of like DAS, to say, hey, you can come in and you can service our shoppers, you can service your customers in our mall, but here's the payment agreement or what have you. There's a lot you can do since it's your data. With the data analytics you collect, you kind of take that, you can take that away from the carriers potentially, and you can have that data instead of yourself. And it's still newer, so we're still kind of dipping our toe in there. We're not jumping into it yet, but this is kind of an exciting area that we're moving towards. So that's kind of our overarching idea of where we are with wireless and how we deal with the wireless within our environment. So, Mike, I don't know if you have a question or two for me before we move on to the next presenter.
Thanks, Brian. That was great. It's very interesting. You know, as you know, shopping centers are near and dear to my heart.
Yes, they are. As is DAS.
So, how are you finding carriers' willingness to pay to be on the DAS and keep the DAS upgraded as we move to 4G and 5G and things like that?
You know, they still have an interest there, which I am somewhat surprised, although we are putting in newer antennas that will be able to service kind of the future as opposed to the older antennas, which were really LTE based. But there is still some interest. They are still, you know, sometimes there's a lot of negotiation there, but we are still seeing income from the ones we have. We are still seeing some interest come through. I don't think it's as much as it used to be, especially with, you know, the small cell and everything else that's coming through, but it's still there for some of the carriers, which I find to be a little fascinating.
Yeah, it helps to have great venues like what you have, so it doesn't hurt at all. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of network monetization? Curious, what are the various things you're doing across, you know, kind of the whole spectrum of technology to monetize your investments?
No, that's a good question. We've gone through a few different areas of that, and some of them were just thought experiments, and some of them we actually executed on. The first was, you know, we thought about, you know, putting ads on our Wi-Fi, you know, so that when you jump on, you have to watch an ad before you get on. You know, we thought, you know, we want our shoppers to be there. We don't want to try and inconvenience them. So that was something we went down a ways. You know, we even talked to, I think, Boingo in the past, who wanted to charge for Wi-Fi. Again, the thought experiment, but at the end, we opted against that. And finally, we went to the carrier offloading, which really takes the Wi-Fi and, without much on our end, just kind of channels it through. You know, when somebody comes on site, their phone, if it's on one of the carriers that are on carrier Wi-Fi, phone jumps on that Wi-Fi, they make all the calls and data on there, and they're metered, and they get, you know, we get to bill them back for that. So that's where we've really been focusing our time, because it seems the least invasive to the shoppers, gives us some income, and also helps the carriers as well, because it gets them off of it, and they don't have to invest in DAS at that point.
Yeah, so. Is it still just T-Mobile and AT&T and the offloading?
Yeah, those are the only two that we're dealing with.
Yeah, I have heard that one of the biggest opportunities in offloading is with residential, because people spend 16 hours a day in their places, and all right.
Yeah, and people don't get phone lines anymore, so this is going to be their home line, and you're going to see income on all that.
All right. So, well, thank you, Ryan. That was great. Up next, we have HQO and Steve Dietz. So we're going to start with a video by HQO. All right, great. Up next is, I'd like you to welcome with me, Steve Dietz. He's the VP and Head of Product Management for HQO. Steve, all yours.
Thanks very much, Michael. And someone in our marketing department clearly has better music taste than I do. And I think that video does a nice job giving an overview of HQO. Relative to today's presentation, though, I just want to drill in on this word experience that we're using and how it pertains to all the presenters, and I think ties very well to HQO. So, you know, HQO, our software is used by leading landlords all around the world, as well as a number of leading occupiers. So on the landlord side, related at Hudson Yards is a great example. Also Shell on the occupier side is a great example, customer for us, for those of you who aren't familiar. And when we look at the world, you know, the reality is that 2024 might be the hardest year that the commercial real estate industry has ever seen. There are a number of statistics here you can see on the slide about where the industry is sort of seeing itself. But the crunch time is now. We've had a lot of success helping our customers through this time, but we feel their pain very directly. And so we're thinking a lot about, well, what can we do about this situation? And really where this is going, and again, exactly in the heart of the webinar today, is that the market is simply more competitive. If you want to keep tenants, whether you're providing wireless solutions or simply just keeping a building up to date in many other ways, you have to provide a top-notch experience or you will not be able to drive returns or maybe even keep your building. And so we're very focused on how do we actually help asset owners and employers create great experiences for the human beings coming in there whenever they come, hopefully as often as possible. You saw in the video one thing, a product we released in the fall, which we call Rex Intelligence, Rex standing for a real estate experience. And it really is about trying to start to find return on investment for asset owners. So how do you actually learn, and this is what the product helps you do, it's a survey product, how do you actually learn what human beings care about when they come to a space? And that's become very important for us. And then one of the things we like to talk about, and I think is, it's sort of obvious when you say it out loud, but for us, it is in the heart of what we do, is how do you move up the continuum from a commoditized space in the bottom left-hand chart of this, or bottom left-hand side of this chart, to a personal experiential building in the top right here. Because we fundamentally believe that no matter which asset class a building is in, A plus, A, B, whatever, that there's always an opportunity to make that experience better, whether it's to better amenitize it, whether it's to, you know, make some sort of investment in one of the, the lobby or something like that. Or simply fixing things like in our building, the building I'm in here today, what we identified through surveys and was that, frankly, just the restrooms were problematic, and it really made a huge difference for all the tenants, including us. But we focus very hard on how do we help asset managers, occupiers move up this continuum of experience, and we believe that everybody can do it, and so we're here to help. The last thing that I wanted to point out and where we're also having success in really driving the experience within physical buildings is making them a little more accessible and making great data available to both the tenants and the end users who are in there. So what you're looking at on the screen is a picture from a piece of software that we actually acquired called Symbiosi. And what it does is a very high-tech digital twin, meaning a 3D model of buildings. And, you know, in and of itself, a 3D model of a building is not going to change the experience of a user or of a tenant or anything like that. Anybody can build a cute graphic. What's different here is that we're now connecting the 3D model to, or the digital twin, to all the data that exists in the building. And then not only that, I mean, there are systems that will do that, although they're somewhat complex, making that available directly to end users, directly to tenants, so they can monitor things like not just temperature and occupancy, but CO2 levels, Wi-Fi quality, things that really do make a big difference in terms of a given human being's experience of the real estate, but are very hard to manage generally. Depending on the jurisdiction you're in, there are a lot of regulations in particular rolling out about carbon consumption, carbon neutrality of physical assets. And so these types of monitoring solutions and connecting them to how a building is used are really becoming essential for both the asset owner and the tenant who's staying in there. So overall, I mean, I think HQO, we really, like all of the presenters here today, we just believe that there is a way to make the experience of buildings better Our way through doing that is making it much more accessible and easy to use through software.
All right, that was great. Thanks, Steve. A couple questions for you. So I'd be interested. It seems like the whole space you're in has been growing very rapidly, both in adopters as well as breadth of the products. How would you say it's kind of changed since 2019 through the whole COVID experience to today?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So first, and there are really are three eras. It's a good way to describe it, sort of the pre-COVID era, through the pandemic, and then where we are today. You know, our industry started with a realization from asset owners that they needed their buildings to be much more tech forward. And so there's this explosion of growth in the industry, and that coincided with 0% interest rates. So it was very easy for new companies to get funded. Then you had the pandemic, where obviously that was very bad if you owned buildings, because very few people were coming to them. But the really interesting thing was that it created this global A/B test, if you will, of do human beings really want to work together or not? And interestingly, I think the consensus that we're emerging with now is indeed they do. You know, there will always be remote work. Nobody denies that. And there will be some companies who are remote first. But by and large, we see this enormous trend back together. What's changed now, though, is that capital has become much more scarce. And so what we see in the industry, and that's purely due to interest rates, right? Interest rates went up and everyone is return seeking in a less risky way. And so in our industry, there's consolidation, because no longer will any company or any idea get funded. You know, we're, I think, very fortunate to be extremely well capitalized. We raised another $50 million over the summer. And, you know, from where we sit, we look at ourselves as a platform that will, you know, be one of the future of this industry. But we shouldn't be shy to say that there will be a lot of consolidation, unfortunately, for a lot of companies. But we're pretty bullish on the need and the demand in the space long run.
That's great. Time for one more question. So, you know, building automation has been a big thing. Obviously, people trying to be more sustainable and manage their energy better. You know, care to talk a minute about how you're integrating with those building systems to provide better experience and give people more control over their environments?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a good tie back to the slide I showed a minute ago. So we are primarily a software platform, right? We've always integrated directly to things like the access control side of the building. So if you want to get up and down the elevator, you want to get through the turnstiles. And then we've always controlled things like meeting rooms and booking resources, booking events and classes and things like that. But your tie that you're drawing here is really essential right now. So we now have, and Symbiosi self-developed, it's effectively like a small router and Raspberry Pi-like device that goes inside of a building and is connected to all of the environmental sensors. I don't think there's anything particularly revolutionary about that fact, but when we're now able to tie that sensor data back into the platform that tells you where the visitors are, that tells you where the events are happening, it's really the combination of that data that gets really powerful for users, and it allows them to do something. I mean, we have operations examples through that, you know, the 3D model that I showed. Simple things like, you can tell when one of the HVAC systems break because it gets either really hot or cold in one of those rooms. And so hours sooner than may have been the case, someone can get there to fix it. I mean, these things sound really basic, but it sometimes does look a little magical when it happens correctly.
Yeah, makes a big difference. All right, thank you, Steve. Up next is a video from our second sponsor, Air Tower Networks.
At Air Tower Networks, we know that connectivity is so much more than a signal. As the wireless provider for buildings, we open new ways to make an impact on the world, to simply make someone's day, even to keep us safe during life-threatening emergencies. We go beyond connectivity with an end-to-end service. We design, build, install, and manage wireless networks, giving your building a trusted long-term partner throughout. With innovative solutions in 5G cellular systems, managed Wi-Fi, and emergency responder communication systems. Our in-house specialists are available 24/7, 365, because we know that better connectivity means better lives. So we're truly more connected. That's AirTower as a service.
All right, thank you. Up next, I'd like to introduce Manny Dureja, who is the founder and president of AirTower Networks. Welcome, Manny.
Great, thanks a lot, Michael. Really appreciate it. Thank you for everyone joining here for the webinar, which RealCom is kind enough to invite us and include us on today. Today I'll share with you just a brief series of slides just to keep the efficiency of time constraints going. Try to cover as much of this over just the next 5 minutes or so. To begin, I'll just briefly share with you those solutions that you may have just seen in the video that we provide here at AirTower for the built environment today. We deliver really one of three pillars, two pillars, or all three of our pillars within our venues and buildings at AirTower today. And those include cellular, the ability to connect anyone with their device and their cell phone the moment that they walk through the door is always our end goal, without the need to log on to anything, connect everyone really through their own carriers that they're subscribing to through a cellular network throughout the property. Second, managed Wi-Fi, becoming increasingly popular, as Charlie shared, within our multifamily properties today. And then beyond the managed Wi-Fi and under that same private umbrella, private LTE, CBRS services, which a few of the folks have mentioned during the conversations today. And then last but not least, perhaps if you've experienced a new building within your portfolio that has required an emergency responder radio system, we provide and deliver the connectivity for first responders. This is baked within the fire code today and adopted in all 50 states. So with those three solutions, we at AirTower have become the fastest growing provider of these connectivity solutions across the country today, with 150 million square feet of networks delivered within the built environment. Have also become one of the largest providers of these services in the nation. Our experiences in hand today, I'll spend my segment of time here over the next few minutes, a number of slides, just providing you a very brief overview of some of the common questions that we have during our client engagements, describing to you how the rubber meets the road with connectivity in your built space, and really start that by talking about the problem with connectivity, the causes for the problem, why improve connectivity, and then into some more of the specifics around the common parts and components of putting a connectivity network into your building and applications that we're seeing running over our networks today, increasingly more every day. And then lastly, just a few of the top pitfalls that we've heard of from some of our customers and through our network deployments, and happy to share with you some of those as you're thinking about planning for your own connectivity solution in your environment. So with that, start off with a few brief slides. That connectivity is getting worse. I think this is a common question out there. Is it getting worse? Is my cell phone a few years ago seemed to work great, or the Wi-Fi, when we installed it worked great, but over the last number of years with the influx of the amount of devices and the usage and the use cases over our networks are really just becoming jammed everywhere. In fact, these three articles between Time, CBS, and Wall Street Journal all published just in the last 6 months. So we're really, seeing a lot of this surface through even the news media for a problem that, we've been solving for a number of years now. So really, what are those causes? If you look over to the right side, we really segment them to three key causes today of why we're not getting as great connectivity inside of the built environment that maybe we once used to, or maybe we actually need to put in for the first time. And those three reasons we find is number one, airtight buildings, construction materials becoming a lot better, LEED certified buildings increasingly happening all across the country, and the materials that are used for these buildings are actually part of the cause. The second is the congested network environment with everything that we're using on Wi-Fi to cell phone networks. And then last but not least, the diminishing signals that we're experiencing from our cell phone tower sites, which the picture to the left kind of depicts what we're seeing just from one of those technical issues, is that the airwaves are actually just becoming shorter out there as we transition from 3G to 4G to 5G and just less able to penetrate within the building. And overall, we're using these towers for a lot more than we used to. So that's also part of the degradation. But of course, you know, the question now is why solve it? Why improve it? Well, I think what we're hearing from our customers is that their tenants, their residents, or overall their buildings are in just high demand of it. So common question or point that comes through the tenants in the commercial environment is that our employees just can't get their job done without proper connectivity. And in multifamily, we've seen this surface up just in the last several months in the annual renter survey as the number one amenity requirement that renters actually said they wouldn't rent without being reliable cell phone reception. So we're seeing this across all asset classes today. And you know what we're seeing, and I'll kind of jump a pretty big step here. I think we heard some of the brilliant planning from Verdon, Charlie, Brian, in terms of actually running and managing networks in these building venues across the country. So that big step that we would typically get to this point in would be part of that digital master plan that the team here had mentioned. And we are oftentimes actually part of that master planning with our customers and really developing what is the right plan, what's the right digital topology for this. But just to give you a brief overview that this is, you can kind of look to be, is kind of the 80% rule across networks that are deployed in buildings today, is that topology typically has a head end. We're in an MPOE room, usually in the lower levels. And then there's distributed hardware between switches, or what we call remotes with cellular networks, that are scattered throughout the building based on the network design and typically co-located in IDF closets. And then once we get into each of the floors, we actually pull cabling through the horizontal through each of the corridors. And that might be fiber, could be coax, or could be Ethernet cabling, depending on what type of antenna system that we're deploying. And then in most cases, we're just putting the antennas on the ceilings and corridors. And multifamily, we find with managed Wi-Fi, we actually get into the units to deploy that network type. And really, you know, as we look out ahead with all of the advantages now coming out ahead, IoT and the devices to really leverage connectivity beyond just giving your residents or tenants great connectivity, something that they're in high that they're demanding. It is around a lot of these smart IoT use cases now that we find these sometimes are most common we're seeing running over our networks today, from EV charging stations to access control, climate control, to ultimately have a smarter, more efficient building that you're able to operate with. And the list keeps going on. Every day, the use cases that our customers come to continues to grow. And what we're finding is that the IoT environment just heavily relies on connectivity almost as its own form of electricity to help power how those devices and those applications really work. So, you know, really I'll kind of land here on my last slide for us. This is just around some of the top pitfalls that we you know, have heard of from our customers. And ultimately, as we were building AirTower out, we really were laser focused on solving within our own internal processes to really make this a really seamless, smooth experience for our customer into something that is a pretty heavy lift of installation of infrastructure that has to happen within the space. So, you know, number one, we find we get in pretty early on in an engagement, and one that we'd be highly recommend is making sure all the stakeholders as part of the building are part of the exercise. And that sometimes does include the tenants and the residents within the environment, just to, you know, share which days will be in their relative space, and then of course property management, engineering, and a number of the other parties there that are oftentimes involved with the building. And the last few here, carrier timelines. We find this to be one of the biggest delays across a network that we've heard of from our customers, being you know, issues in delivery of their networks in the past, and that's just the oftentimes not the oversight of management that's needed with the wireless carriers or the backhaul fiber circuit carriers to ensuring that the actual connectivity coming into the building is lit up so the service works. And then on the network consolidation side, part of that digital master planning is pretty key to make sure, making sure that you're really, you know, working to think about what you're not only going to be today, but tomorrow, and maybe even over the next 3 to 5 years, and how can we lower the cost of deploying with network consolidation and not putting too much more in or not enough in for what ultimately might cost more money in the end. And then lastly, of course, just having a great proven partner we find is pretty key. Experiences of the executive team, management team, and actual deployment experience we find makes a huge impact for successful connectivity and properties today. So with that, leaving it relatively brief and short, I know we have a pretty good session of Q&A here over the next 25 minutes, and I'll pass it over to Michael. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Manny. Let me just have you take one question, then we'll have the rest of the panelists turn their cameras on. As you look across all the different asset classes, you know, I expect that there isn't any one technology that's going to meet all needs. But, you know, what do you think of things like, Wi-Fi versus cellular versus DAS versus that? I mean, are there use cases where some work better or some work worse or that kind of thing?
Yeah. You know, I think from our vantage point, we like to, we remain agnostic as we enter every conversation in the digital master planning with our customers, because it really is, different use cases and different asset classes drive the outcome of what the best network type is. And having that agnostic view, ultimately, we think puts in a network that not only that properties can rely on today, but over the course of time. And we're seeing a variation there, of course. Within commercial, cellular, very, very common. Within multifamily, as Charlie was mentioning, NOI is very attractive to the multifamily owners today. So managed Wi-Fi has increasingly become very popular within multifamily. And then, public venues and other venues that have maybe a lot of folks on busy game days, if you will, or just busy days, they need everything under the sun to be in their particular venues because of the amount of usage and capacity that they need to provide that seamless experience. So, I think part of that discovery process during that digital master planning is unpacking that.
Great, thank you. The other panelists, turn the cameras on. Okay. Well, looks like we're getting there. Good enough. All right. I have a question here from Mohammed Namar. Hopefully I spelled or pronounced that correctly. Charlie, do you want to try to take this one? What is your comment on the FCC's proposed ban on the ubiquitous bulk Wi-Fi? You might quick give us a definition of what that is.
Yeah.
Tell us what the FCC wants to do.
Sure. Yeah, well, I'll try. Just to keep things confusing, by the way, I decided to put a vest on so that Manny and I look like twins. This is really new. I don't know, I'll throw this one to Vardhan and to Manny also, but literally within the last week and a half, the FCC announced a proposed rule that essentially is meant to ensure that residents in multifamily buildings have choice in terms of how they receive and what service providers they're able to use for internet or cable or satellite or other things. This follows, I think Colorado, if I'm not mistaken, last year, the Colorado legislature had proposed a similar state rule. So this could challenge the concept of managed Wi-Fi, and I think it's still feels like it's very new and emerging, but it's certainly worth talking about. I mean, I guess my comment on this is, I understand, and this is not Brookfield's comment. This is I think about people and I think about residents and buildings first in terms of what they need and how they can have a good experience. I understand that, I think at the end of the day, people want a good experience. They want to connect to the internet and not have to think about it, right? I don't know if choice is necessarily synonymous with a good experience. Maybe it is in some instances, but I think if the landlord of the building can provide great connectivity that's rock solid and works, and when something doesn't work, they can provide good troubleshooting and support, et cetera. Like, it's on the landlord to do that, or the managed Wi-Fi partner to do that in the case of managed Wi-Fi. If they can do that successfully, I would argue that 99% of residents might not care, and they might not need choice, right? So I think it's this really interesting thing that's emerging. I think the FCC is really focused on choice and trying to be consumer friendly. I don't know. That's my take. We'll see where it goes. It's an interesting one. I don't know if Manny or Vardhan has a comment, because I know Vardhan, I know that JBG plays in this arena as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to maybe comment on that just briefly. And again, these are my comments only, not JBG's. And I couldn't agree more with Charlie that this is all very new. And look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the FCC and what Chairwoman Rosenworcel is looking to do, which is to introduce, you know, choice, and choice leads to competition, and competition theoretically leads to better service. I think the challenge that exists in the market today, pre-managed Wi-Fi, pre-bulk agreements, is frankly quite a lack of choice to begin with. So I'm not sure, you know, I think as we dig into this further, I 100% agree with Charlie that landlords really ought to be focused on delivering extraordinarily robust quality. And that's either through traditional service providers who they're allowing to enter into their building, or through sort of call it more novel, new, creative contracts with managed Wi-Fi providers or otherwise. I think choice does in general lead to competition and quality. That's more so the case in the enterprise market. I don't think there's a tremendous amount of choice in the consumer market today, even outside of multifamily housing. You know, if you look at all of us on the panel or those of us in the audience, I mean, how many internet providers do you really have to choose from? Unfortunately, the delivery of the plant, you know, the cable plant or the fiber plant, is not really regulated like utility, but ultimately connectivity is functionally the fourth utility, as important to modern life and commerce as water, gas, and electric. So, you know, we are deploying managed Wi-Fi, and we've deployed managed Wi-Fi in certain properties where it's not a must take. Managed Wi-Fi is simply an option alongside traditional call it options from cable and other fiber providers that have brought their plant into the building. And I understand what the FCC is maybe alluding to is in the case that managed Wi-Fi is the only option, then they're taking some, you know, some issue with that. But I think in many cases, managed Wi-Fi, even as the sole option in a residential property, could very well, you know, result in extraordinary high quality of service. You know, I think if you look at the survey data, you're not getting a tremendous sort of positive reaction from residents on how they feel about their usual suspect cable or fiber provider. I mean, it's just not a good experience. So I think we as, you know, stewards of real estate and then the customer experience need to do what makes the most sense for our customers, and not they'll likely vote with their feet or with their dollar. So I think there's a lot more to be studied, and I'm sure the FCC will continue to kind of elaborate further on their recommendations, and we'll be watching it closely.
All right, next question I've got is from Carolyn Frith. She wants to address it to Brian. Does he think Wi-Fi is becoming old technology with the introduction of DAS and CBRS? Do you think they will ever fully replace the need for Wi-Fi?
So my take on this, and, you know, welcome the other panelists to kind of weigh in on this also, is, you know, we're a bunch of technologists. We live in the technology industry. I kind of feel like Wi-Fi is old technology, and it's, you know, it's on its way out. But I know a lot of people who aren't ready to move into this any newer space. So I kind of see it as, you know, when we say, will it ever fully take over? I think it depends what kind of changes Wi-Fi goes under over the next several years, if they're going to innovate in some kind of central way. But I think there's a place for Wi-Fi. I think that it's kind of like having your old school phone at home, right? You got a landline at home because you may not have service at home, right? So I don't have a landline at home, but I do have Wi-Fi, and my cellular service at home is great. I'm not gonna put a DAS at home, but like I use Wi-Fi calling. Maybe I should put a DAS at home. Maybe some people walking by, I'll make some money. But I think that there's going to be a place for it as kind of that fallback, that kind of reliable place for things, and maybe even potentially, you know, we don't use it for backhaul really much. We use microwave technology for that, but there might be a place for it in backhaul and things like that, kind of a more stable, older technology that's kind of rock solid as it goes forward, with the newer technologies being something that we're going to really kind of ride into the future. But I'd welcome, you know, Manny, Charlie, Vardan, Mike, even to kind of weigh in on their thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, thanks, Brian. I mean, all great points. And I think I go back to it just being really an environment and the use cases that we think ultimately drive the outcome of the network type. So as we kind of look to public venues, for example, going back to the example of needing everything under the sun, they, in understanding Brian's running a form of public venue, but thinking more like stadium or train station type, where there's so many users coming in during peak moments or game days or event days that they need every lane on the highway available for all that traffic to run over. And that, you know, oftentimes is what drives the need of additional spectrum, additional airwaves and Wi-Fi, you know, obviously in that mix. So I think, you know, really dependent on, you know, the type of venue and the business it is.
Okay. So while we're on the topic, I'm going to ask my own question. So recently I wrote a white paper talking about the security vulnerabilities in a BYOD environment posed by having people's personal devices on your enterprise Wi-Fi. For example, if you're a big bank or mortgage company or something like that, people bring their phones in, they're sharing that Wi-Fi infrastructure with your laptops, printers, and things like that. Feels to me like that's a big vulnerability that you could solve with either a second Wi-Fi network or a private network using CBRS. Manny, I wonder if you'd care to talk about maybe some of the security differences between the technologies and what might be appropriate in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of security, this is a real top feature to how we're driving the outcome of the network type. And I think in some of our most secure environments, we were talking about DC, what makes it a bit unique. I mean, a lot of federal, we're actually headquartered in DC, a lot of agencies that we've been a part of, including, you know, emergency and security agencies that are really protective on the traffic. And in a lot of cases, even require everyone to turn in their cell phones as they walk through the door. But where there isn't a network and it's deployed in those environments, or even in healthcare that's dealing with just a lot of hacking events these days and attacks, that the security is you know, top issue. And what we're finding is that the more closed environment through cellular or a private LTE environment is increasingly becoming the popular choice for those particular space because of those needs.
Okay, great. I have another question from David Smith. Are you seeing PoE penetrate the market as a means to reduce CapEx and complexity? Charlie, Brian, one of you want to take that one?
I can start on that and then Charlie can jump in. You know, we've been using PoE for a long time. That's kind of our choice of connectivity when we're looking at a lot of our endpoint devices in our centers. It does reduce complexity. It hopefully is reducing the cost. You know, there's some limitations to it still, and we're kind of working through those as you know, we have large centers, right, with, you know, only, you know, 300 feet that we can go with a PoE device. So there's ways around that with extenders and expands and things like that. But I do see it as you know, that's the way we're doing everything now, because no reason to, like David's mentioning, no reason to increase complexity, no reason to increase, you know, all the other stuff you have to do. You have it plugged into your switch, you've got your infrastructure all there. To us, that's really the main way we want to do business.
Great.
Charlie, you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think I tend to agree, get into sort of the nitty gritty of the specifics, but I think I tend to agree.
All right, Manny, I have a question for you from Benedict Ochio Grosso. Does AirTower finance a DAS or Wi-Fi deployment in exchange for annuity arrangement? Does AirTower have influence over carriers who may contribute depending on the venue?
Yeah, no, thanks. I didn't get a chance to share in our brief bio, but AirTowers, is actually a company that's backed by one of the largest global infrastructure firms in the world, and has given us really the ability to become very creative with the delivery and pricing of the solutions to not require any CapEx in many cases now, or coming up with a more creative in all CapEx if something there in the middle works out better to manage the overall operating costs on the property. So, we have a lot of flexibility that we work through. So we do that in a lot of our cases today. And when we get into our cellular networks, I think, part of having a great partner for when you get to a point of selecting one is really the relationships that they should have with the mobile carriers. A lot of our team actually worked at, were former executives of the wireless carriers in the past and there are other businesses that have been very tied into the space. So those relationships become critical, we find, to ultimately, getting as much as we can gain from the carrier to contribute or even pay to be part of that network. So in either case, though, yes to both, I'd say.
Are you seeing any changes in the carrier's interest in being on DAS?
Absolutely. I think what we're seeing is what Brian shared earlier, where there are select public venues. I'm familiar with Brian's, one of his portfolio facilities in Tyson's Corner. I think it might even be one of his flagships, like Brian shared with me in the past, which is just about 10 minutes away from where I'm at now. I think carriers are still very attracted to getting into marquee properties that have a heavy number of users every day, particularly public venue types like a mall. But mostly everything else, we are seeing a significant pullback from the mobile carriers contributing, if anything, to the built space. So really, when we get to that service offering of providing connectivity as a total as a service with no CapEx, it really helps to relieve a lot of the capital constraints that our clients run into because of that flexibility and the pullback from mobile carriers today across most of the buildings today.
Great. Fardan, you mentioned that one of your key anchor tenants is Amazon HQ2. I'm sure a lot of people on this call went through the fire drill a few years back trying to put together proposals and attract them. I know Bedrock in Detroit certainly did. How has having them kind of on board helped with leasing and merchandising and, getting the right mix of restaurants versus retail and things like that for you?
Sure. So I think the impact of Amazon and HQ2 really can't be understated. It's just in terms of the physical footprint, the number of employees that they're bringing into the market, and also the differentiation of the labor market, not just in terms of numbers, but in terms of differentiating the talent pool that was previously, as Manny mentioned, likely, especially in our market, just given our location quotient adjacent to the Pentagon, we were really a government enclave. The buildings in Legacy Pentagon City and Crystal City, office buildings that is, were largely housing GSA and GSA contractors, specifically the DoD primes and the subcontractor community in service of the government and specifically DoD. And certainly there are a number of employees that were previously government employees that are finding a new home in the private sector with Amazon. But I think the introduction of Amazon into the market is also introducing a number of new entrants into the DC region broadly, North Virginia more specifically, and there's a different talent pool. That is extremely exciting. If our team has studied what went on in Amazon HQ1, and what you see is a clustering of technology companies around Amazon, not particularly to cooperate or even compete with Amazon, but really to really poach talent. And so we're really expecting and are starting to see that clustering effect take shape and take place. And that then has a knock-on effect on, you know, the type of person or persons that want to live in the market with walkability to their office, whether it's at Amazon or another employer. Residents in the community turn what's otherwise an 8-hour neighborhood to an 18-hour neighborhood that brings retail. So there's this virtuous cycle that really all starts with economic development. So we couldn't be, and if you think about engines of economic development, particularly in the private sector and at the scale of Amazon HQ2, you know, I don't think we could have asked for a better one.
Okay. Let's see. Question about customer experience apps. So maybe Charlie, you want to take this. So when you think about customer experience apps, I assume you have one or more. Did you choose to develop those yourself? Did you partner with someone like an HQO or someone else? Or, you know, decide not to do any at all? You want to?
Yeah, no, that's a subject that's near and dear. So it depends on what asset type you're talking about. I mean, I think each one has its own interesting set of players and ecosystem. HQO obviously is a big a premier platform. There's a number of them out there. I think there's still just a ton of opportunity in that area. You know, I think that whether it's tenants in a commercial building or residents in a multifamily building, ultimately, like, there are certain things that they need and want, and it's not always driven by interacting with a screen, right? It's sort of like some of the best experiences for them are sort of those magical ones where things just happen without them needing to sort of interact with the device in their pocket. So I think there's a ton of opportunity in that arena. I'm super interested in it. I think in terms of, I think you asked whether we developed anything in-house. So again, not speaking on behalf of any one particular, or maybe what I will do is speak on behalf collectively of a number of commercial real estate landlords that I've worked with. I think, again, I said it before, in my experience, commercial real estate is not a digitally native industry. And I have not seen a commercial landlord with an investment and the real required sort of commitment to building digital products, to build something really compelling in that arena. I think there's still an opportunity there. I just, you know, again, in this market, I haven't seen landlords doing it. So I think there's, what we have is a really interesting ecosystem of players that compete in the depending on use type. And I still think there's a lot of opportunity there to enhance that experience in new and interesting ways.
Now, how are you driving adoption at all by making the app a requirement to be a tenant in your spaces? Like, it's the only way you can open the door, it's the only way you can get by security, or anything like that?
That's a good question. I think I've seen that in some buildings. I do think I've seen that in some buildings where, especially with access control, mobile access control becomes sort of the preferred method of going through a turnstile in a commercial building, for example. And that's a pretty powerful solution, especially from a security perspective, right? If an employee leaves, you can redact their credentials or remove their credentials, et cetera, without having to worry about key cards or fobs or whatever. In multifamily, I have not seen it as a requirement. I've seen some landlords try it for apartment door lock entry, and I've seen them sort of roll back a little bit and say, oh, we still need to offer key cards if yeah, a tenant wants that. So I think it's kind of an interesting, we're still in flux there.
Yeah, because the apps cost a lot and adoption is always very iffy, right?
Super challenging. Yeah, that's the gotcha.
All right, Chuck, I think we're just about out of time.
Yeah, you guys did great. I knew you were going to run through all of your questions. I still have a few more. You managed to answer all the questions from the audience, so congratulations on that. So that looked very good. I was so motivated by the vest component, I went and got mine so I can blend in nicely with the crowd. So again, thank you, all you guys. Thanks, Mike, for agreeing to do this. I would encourage you, you know, get definitely think about contributing at RealCom. There's going to be plenty of discussion there about connectivity. So I'm sure you may get a note from Howard, a love note asking to share some of your experience. So thanks again to all of our panelists and just the valuable contributions in today's sections. It's just a lot of information to process. Hopefully people took notes. Good news is it's a recorded video, so you'll be able to go back and review it. Thanks to the live audience for having some good incoming questions. We really do appreciate that. And whether you've joined us live or you're watching this as a recording, we do thank you for tuning in, and be sure to register for our next webinar. It's on April 4th. It's called Data Fusion Mastery, a Blueprint for Streamlined Enterprise Integration. Lots of great speakers on that one, great value. Also, you'll be sure to register for RealCom, the IBCom. It's happening June 20th and 21st. I was making sure I had my dates right. I had to glance at the slide. And it's got pre-conference events starting on June 18th. If you're a golfer, beautiful course. You won't want to miss that one. It's at the Tampa, Florida Convention Center. So that's it for today. We just so appreciate it. We wish you all well, be safe. And until next time, thank you again. We're out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.